Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
To the rail, hip hop.
Bringing voices to power.
Okay, in this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, hosted by the Community Reinvestment Show, I have a talk with Jim March Simpson. Jim March Simpson is working in Wisconsin for the Jill Stein campaign on the presidential election recount. Jim and I will discuss voting machines and voter integrity. I was surprised to find out that two of the four companies overseeing machines located in Huntsville, Alabama, had been kicked out before and let back in under certain conditions. I definitely want to know more about that. Good morning, Jim. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me fine?
Yeah, you coming in great. So
okay,
I just read the summary of the show, so I want you to start it off tell us what's going on in Wisconsin when it comes to this recount and voters machine and voter integrity.
Well, let's see. It's a big subject, and it's hard to know where to start. But let's start in Wisconsin for sure. Wisconsin's, like most of the smaller states, has a big mixture of different voting machines in different counties. Okay, that was before the recount, and that'll be going on after the recount, and it'll be going on all across America. So in each county you dig into to try to figure out what's going on with the initial vote and with the recount, you've got to, people like me have got to stop and think, okay, go to the list of the Secretary of State side of who's using what voting machines, and then use what information and resources we have on each voting machine to draft our tactics. Which public records requests do we hit them with? What kinds of documents are we looking for? What kinds of known security holes exist for each of the different types of machines? And that's not a Wisconsin problem. That's an America. As far as the recount itself, very early in the process, this judge, name of Valerie Bailey Wren, was a state judge who, up until April of this year, worked at a law firm that had major Republican ties. They actually did work directly for Scott Walker, and one of the partners recently left that law firm to run this Republican political kitty. It's something called the Brady Foundation, based in Wisconsin. And sorry, oh good Lord, my wife's sitting here correcting me on the name of it, because my wife did a lot of the research on this. You know my wife, Dana Jill Simpson.
Okay. Yes, I'm very familiar with her. I'm trying to get her on. I've been trying my best to get her on one of my shows, but go ahead.
All right. Well, here's the deal. Okay, this Bradley Foundation is basically a Republican PR slush fund, about $850 million, that they actually spend more on political subjects than the Koch brothers. Okay? Well, in any case, this judge, name of Valerie, made a decision early in the recount process that each county would be allowed to do either a machine recount, which is take all the ballots and pile them through the same machines that counted them the first time, okay, that's a big exercise in nothing, or a county be allowed to do a hand count. And the pattern is in the big urban counties in the southeast corner of the state. So that's like, crying out loud, what is the name of that big, the biggest city in Wisconsin? What the heck is it called?
Milwaukee.
Yeah, Milwaukee, of course it is. So Milwaukee and the surrounding areas, where most of the population of the state is located, is the closest to Chicago, and it's the area of the state with the highest minority population. Well, they are trending towards doing machine recounts. The rural, whiter parts of Wisconsin, and believe me, the rural parts of Wisconsin are extremely white, okay? They're mostly doing hand counts. So that right there creates a racially based disparity on how the recount is being handled. Now, the question then is the recount being handled correctly? Well, the single ugliest thing we've come across is in Brown County, which is the city of Green Bay. Now, before I tell you what Green Bay's done, I've got to backtrack for a second and tell you about the latest generation of voting machines. Something actually good happened in voting machine technology over the last 2-3 years, and it's something we didn't expect to have happen. In Alabama, if you vote on a paper ballot, you're likely doing a fill-in-the-bubble type of form, right? So you fill in the bubble next to whoever it is you're going to vote for president, for mayor, for dog catcher, whatever it is. And as you feed the machine, now sometimes, by the way, it's not a bubble, it's a little square area that you fill in. There's different variations, but it's all based on the concept of filling the bubble. As you scan the paper in, this really primitive scanner picks it up by just knowing which bubble positions are either light or dark to record a vote or not vote in that position. Okay? This is a primitive kind of scanner called MarkSense scanning. that cannot take an actual picture and retain that picture of the whole ballot. Well, here's the good news. In the rest of the whole data processing world, the rest of the computer biz has abandoned mark sense scanning. It was a primitive thing. It's now gone the way of the 5 1/4 floppy disk and you know, cassette Walkmans and all that. That tech is gone. Well, so is mark sense scanning. So the voting machine manufacturers had to build voting machines based on modern scanners that, guess what? They do record an entire picture of the ballot, top to bottom, side to side, both sides. Now, that's awesome. Because
yes, it
allows us, because, and it's got a big hard drive inside where it stores the things. Okay? So somebody like me can walk in there with, let's say, 128 gig USB memory stick, and it's sealed package, stapled to a public records request that says, hey, man, I want all those graphic scans. And that way, if something looks funky with that county, I can do my own vote count completely independent of whatever vote counting systems the county has. And believe me, there is a ton of reasons to think that those existing vote counting programs that the county is buying are absolute junk, okay? And some of that ties to Huntsville, Alabama, and we'll go into that.
Yeah, I
now,
was just
the problem.
I'm glad you said that because I was wanting to know about that. You said a lot of them
are
junk.
We're going to go there.
I'm trying to find out, do we have junk here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, here's where it gets interesting. In Brown County, they bought one of these sets of modern scanners, okay? They're made by a company called ES&S, and they got a little one and a big one. The 200 is smaller, the 850 is bigger, but it doesn't matter. They're basically the same thing. ES&S put a toggle switch on it, so where you can, if you want, and by you I mean county election officials, okay? If they want to, they can turn off the saving of those graphic images and throw them away right after your vote is processed. Can you even picture this? So
wow.
I know. Tell me about it. It's
yeah,
a switch
it
that allows them.
For corruption.
Oh, yeah. So it's a switch that allows them to destroy public records, okay? Because the ability to double-check every election based on those graphic scans is something they don't like. Listen, I've been bouncing all over counties in Wisconsin, right? Each time I talk to a county election official about this and say, yeah, because, you know, going forward, we want fast access to these graphic scans, like on election night or soon after, so that we can look at them and do challenges based on that. And when I say that to a county election official in Wisconsin or Colorado or Iowa or California or the various places I've done these public records requests for these same graphic images, they look at me like I just hit them upside the head with a dead mackerel. Okay? they do not like the idea of, and it's like when I mention that, it's like it's the first time it's occurred to them that somebody could use those graphic scans to completely check out the accuracy of what they're doing in every race, right? As they do this recount, they're looking at the Jill Stein race, okay? But there are other races in Wisconsin that look even funkier than the Trump versus Clinton race, okay? There was a race for a state senator here that featured a longtime U.S. senator named Feingold, who's very popular, Democrat, who barely lost, okay? What happened with that race? Well, let's go to now, with all that background, let's go to Brown County. In Wisconsin, the state officials did something nice. They required each county to go ahead and keep those graphic images, and there's nothing in the public records laws that says they're private. So I am going to be able to get to the graphic images across Wisconsin, except in Brown County, when they did the recount, they turned off the graphic scanning.
Exactly.
Okay, so somebody doesn't want me or somebody like me to compare what the ballots looked like right on election night versus what the ballots looked like 3-4 weeks later when they'd had a chance to do various things. Somebody didn't want me making that comparison. Cool.
No,
huh?
They don't.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
It makes me think about. I'm not trying to get you off track, but it makes me think about what happened with Don Sigelman when all those votes. I'd love to get your take.
Happened with those votes overnight. Oh man, if we had had graphic scans of all of Don's votes available for us to just eyeball recount with just groups of volunteers over the internet, that would work. By the way, we're putting together open source software to do our own look at what's going on with the graphically scanned ballots. Okay, so in other words, we're working furiously on having our own software to quickly process those graphic scans. But even without them, we can do spot checking. We can do mark one eyeball count, 5% of them, and we'll get a pretty good idea of what happened, right? Okay.
Right.
Let's talk about a couple other security flaws in the election system and how they all intersect to combine into a pretty obvious disaster. About 7 or 8 years ago, there was this company called Runbeck Election Services in Arizona. And these morons came up with a completely new type of voting machine device called Ballot on Demand. And it works like this. If you go to vote early in a county, let's say it's a week before election day, but you're going to be out of town, so you want to vote over at the county election headquarters, right? This is pretty common. And you're in a particular precinct in the town of Grosstown, whatever it is, okay? You walk into the county election offices, and I need a ballot for it. What's that?
I said, let's use Madison County.
Madison County, okay. So you're in Madison County, and you live in a particular town within Madison County. You go into county election headquarters and say, I need the ballot for where I live at. Okay, so they go over to this shelf that's got a whole bunch of different ballot types. Because if you live in one town, you're going to be voting for one dude for mayor. And if you live in another town, you'll be voting for somebody else for mayor. So they got to give you the right ballot style. And they got a whole pile of, whole stacks of different ones, and they give you the type you need. This has been going on for a long time. Well, Runbeck decided, hey, we got a better idea. We'll do ballot on demand. So they have a computer and a big old laser printer, and whoever's operating the system will punch in which ballot type you need based on your address. And it will print out right there the exact kind of ballot you need. They hand it to you, you fill it out, sounds great. Here's the problem. They set it up with what looks like security, okay? So it tracks how many ballots get printed, because a blank ballot is just as valuable a document, just the right people anyway, as a $20 bill, okay, or more, $50 bill. You got to track how many you got. You got to make sure there's no counterfeits. Well, it is really easy to unplug the printer from that secure computer that's issuing ballots and plug in a laptop and crank out as many more ballots as you want, right? Because the county election officials have the ballot PDF files that the documents. Computer files that generate ballots, they have those. So they can stick them on a laptop, plug them into the same printer, and print as many ballots as they want. Or let's go one step further. But Runbeck didn't even bother to hide the brand name and model name of the printer they were selling to make it work. It was some Okidata printer. It was, as of 7 years ago, it was worth $5,000. It's probably worth about $3,000 now. Okay? You can buy them on Amazon.com. So there's no problem with an election official or an election staff to go buy one of those, set it up in his bedroom, plug it into a $300 computer, grab the ballot definitions files off of the county central voting machine, the one that controls all the votes in the whole county, which we're going to talk more about that. And now you've got a bedroom closet size fake ballot printing station. Okay?
Okay. Uh-huh.
So, with something like that around, if they delay access to the graphic scans, okay, then they have the time and they have the ability to start substituting paper ballots around. In one of the counties, Fond du Lac County, this is a good one, we walk in there and we find their secure ballot container boxes, right? High security.
Right.
Oh, these were a laugh. These were $20 plastic bins. Have you seen these? They're like rectangular, cubicle-looking plastic bins that have got two plastic lids on top that fold from the edges and meet in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And they got a couple
yeah.
of seals on them. Well, there's a steel hinge pin on each side, right? It's
right.
no particular problem with a pair of needle-nose pliers to pull that steel hinge pin out, and now instead of opening from the middle, it'll open from the edges. And you can get into the ballots and do whatever you want. Put it back together again, nobody would ever know, and you've substituted ballots without breaking the seal. No problem. Okay.
Interesting.
What I'm trying to show you is you've got the fact that you can print your own ballots easily, and that's a fairly new thing that these printers exist. It used to be you had to go buy a big old offset printer with 10 guys to run it to print fake ballots. Now, one dude, an Amazon Prime account, and a bedroom closet, you've got a ballot printing station. Then you leave the ballot boxes insecure. You delay access to the graphic scans or don't take a set of graphic scans at all in the case of the recount. And you've got the ability for all kinds of mischief. Cool, huh?
It just sounds like I said, it's just too easily to be corrupted. And I'm not sure exactly what system that they are using in Huntsville, here in Huntsville, in Madison County. I'm not sure, but we know, but based upon the two companies that's based out of Huntsville, you know, two of the four companies being from out of Huntsville, and
well,
what are
yeah,
the chances,
okay.
what you
so,
know about those two companies, what would you say
talk,
machines
yeah, yeah.
were using?
Well, let's talk about voting machine certification. Now, what this is there's this federal program in which this federal bureaucracy called the EAC, Election Assistance Corporation, Election Assistance Commission, manages these private voting machine test labs. They approve the test labs, and they manage the paperwork coming out of the test labs. So if your XYZ voting company, let's say ES&S, you build a new voting machine, you're supposed to submit it to one of the test labs. They produce paperwork saying it's good or bad, whatever. They file that paperwork with the EAC, and now you have an approved voting machine that states can go out and buy. Well, there's only been four test labs ever who were approved for voting machine analysis. Two of them were based in Huntsville, Alabama. Their names are Wiley and Cyber. Cyber used to be called something called Metamore. Both of them are normally, the reason they're in Huntsville is their normal stock and trade is military aerospace contracts. So they would check out, for example, the software behind ICBMs and whatever else the Redstone National Arsenal is building to blow people up in more and more spectacular fashion.
Exactly.
So,
they're moving
right,
close to home.
Right. Now, another of the labs, by the way, was in Colorado and another was in New Jersey. Now, the lab in Colorado, called SysTest, the two labs in Huntsville were both thrown out of the voting machine certification process for making various and sundry mistakes. They didn't say what mistakes they made because the EAC's position was we don't want to reveal where the security holes are that these guys left. But we got a real good idea what some of them are because we independently know where a lot of the security holes is in the final product. And I'll say more about that in a moment.
Okay.
Three of these test labs, both the ones in Huntsville, one in Colorado, got thrown out and allowed back in only under strict conditions and promises to be good, and et cetera, et cetera. The funniest part is the fourth lab based in New Jersey called iBeta. Now, iBeta, during the time they were in operation up through about 2010, they did the best job of all the labs. They caught one company doing some really shady stuff. They had certified a voting machine, but then they got some cheaper parts apparently and put all new guts in the same box and were selling it without doing a new certification. There's a whole long story behind that, but it was obvious just plain fraud on the part of the voting machine vendor, and IBATA caught
okay,
it.
Okay, my next question is, one of those, we got two companies here in Huntsville, so it wasn't neither one of those, was it?
No. We're talking about the test labs, okay?
Okay, I thought you were talking about the four certified.
The two companies in Huntsville don't make voting machines. They test them. So I'm telling you a story now about the test lab in New Jersey did actually catch a problem once, and they, on a couple other occasions, they were critical of various voting systems. IBATA tried to do a pretty good job, but here's the punchline of the joke. What was IBATA's normal software test jobs when they weren't testing voting machines? What were they testing? Video games. So the video game testers in New Jersey did a better job at checking out voting machines than the two military aerospace contractors in Huntsville. So my thing is, either the labs in Huntsville did a deliberately bad job, or I hope to hell we never ever have to crank off an ICBM, because God only knows where it's going to go. All right? Oh, it gets better. Man, your listeners got to understand that this is a rabbit hole that people like me have been chasing since 2003. Let me take you back to the beginning of this briefly. Okay, I'll try and keep this short, like under 2 minutes or less. Back in 2002, there was this lady in Seattle, Washington, who was... Okay. I'm hearing that you're getting questions and feedback. And is there anybody who wants to ask questions at this point where I'm at? Okay, no, don't worry.
Okay,
if anybody
wants to ask questions, they can feel free, if they're listening, they can feel free to call in at 646-716-4355.
I'm just hearing that somehow a radio is playing at the same time I'm talking on the version of the show online.
Oh, no, you must be behind.
From one of the listeners.
Okay. Yeah, listener, could you please turn your radio off?
There's an echo. Are you talking about an echo? I'm hearing an echo, yeah.
No, I hear you just fine. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay,
you're
that's
coming
fine.
Out very
We're good.
Clear.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's good. So let's go back for a moment to 2002. Okay. Lady was writing a book on the theoretical problems of electronic voting. Hey, somebody might be able to hack this stuff. Her name was Bev Harris. She's an old investigative reporter trained by Jack Anderson years earlier. So in January of 2003, while researching the book, she finds at a what's called an FTP site. It's a place on the internet that you stash files, held by Diebold Corporation, and it was 40,000 files showing all kinds of things related to what they were doing. And Bev spent 3 days practically sleepless downloading all 40,000 files, released them into the wild. It's that download that first taught us a lot about what was wrong with electronic voting. All kinds of things came out of it. John Hopkins produced a report on what was wrong with some parts. Bev produced a report on what was wrong with other parts. And in mid-2003, I first got wind of this stash and what the implications were. I'm an old computer tech of 20 years before that. And I'm 50 now. And I said, wait a minute, this isn't right. This can't be right. And I started digging into it, and it turns into the rabbit hole from hell. It's basically consumed my life ever since. So in those 40,000 files, we had actual copies of central tabulator database files. Let me explain what a central tabulator is. When you go to vote in a precinct, you're putting a ballot into one location, and then some of your neighbors are doing early voting. That's another location for votes. Plus, you've got mail-in voting going on. You've got the military and overseas voters going on, people sending in ballots from overseas. One guy actually sent his ballot in from space in this election. One of the astronauts voted remotely, right? Well, how did he do that? Well, they used the military and overseas voting program. So the county you live in, whatever county it is, has to take all those votes in from multiple sources and add them all up. That's called a central tabulator. Central tabulator does more things as well. It generates, it's a station where you can generate the ballot style, your layout, who's running, what the precincts are, all that happy stuff. Now, it also, as it processes votes, as it takes in votes from all these various locations, it adds them up and it has a database inside with all the votes. Well, one of the things we found because of the Bev Harris stash is that anybody could edit the copy of the vote. In the case of the Diebold system, they have their own little program to deal with those ballots called GEMS, Global Election Management Software. And when it looks at the database of votes and ballot styles and all that stuff, everything looks secure. You've got a password to get in, so on and so forth. But if you take that same database and open it with an off-the-shelf copy of Microsoft Access, then all the security vanishes. There's no nothing you do in Microsoft Access to the same data gets recorded in an audit log. You can edit the audit log. You can edit the votes. You can switch the candidate IDs around, and then every vote for one guy will go to the other, and every vote for the other guy will go to the other. You can do whatever you want in that bloody thing. At one point, Diebold tried to deny this was the case, and they said, you know, the audit log can be edited by no human being. So Bev knew some guy with a trained chimpanzee, and they trained an actual, no joke, chimpanzee to edit the audit log of a Diebold central tabulator. His name was Baxter. You can find his video up on the web. Just do Diebold Baxter Chimp. You'll see the video. It's like a minute and a half long. It's hilarious. And by the way, the backstory is Baxter had an addiction to Mentos mints. So he was paid in Mentos mints to hack the vote. Oh, my God. So where do you even start with something like that? This is going places you probably didn't expect. Every time we look deeper, we find more and more security problems with all these voting machines. We know more about the Diebold product line because of Bev Harris's stash. Now, Diebold eventually, from all the bad PR, decided to get out of the voting machine biz. And they sold out to a company called, well, first they sold to something called, they tried changing their name to something called Premier. That didn't work. And they sold the whole thing to Dominion Voting Systems of Canada, which also bought Sequoia. Now, to their credit, Dominion's trying to walk away from all the bad rep, and they put out something called the ImageCast series of voting machines, which are graphic scanning, and they save the graphic images of each ballot, and there's no off switch so that you can't, so it throws away the graphic images. So somebody at Dominion is trying to walk away from this horrible past. But the fact that stuff that bad ever got onto the market and it's used, still in use, the worst of the product line from the old Diebold Corporation, is still in use all over the country. All right.
Wow.
So where do we go from where? Oh man, I swear to God. So where do we go from here?
Yeah, what I want to, I want you to talk about. You touched on it a little bit, but talk a little bit more about the best machines and best strategy way forward to ensure integrity of the vote. I mean, what is if they came to you and said, Jim, we want you to solve this for the whole entire country voting system, what would you recommend?
Right now, about 40% of the vote is happening on graphically scanned optical scan readers. So you're voting on paper, you're feeding it in, and the vote's being calculated for, you know, who exactly you voted for, but at the same time as pictures being taken. That's about 40% and growing. About 80% of the U.S. vote or more, I think it's actually closer to 85%, it's all being taken down on paper of some sort, and the older non-graphical scanning optical scan readers, the kind that scan your paper but don't record squat other than allegedly the vote totals, they're going the way of the dodo bird. And that change is going to happen no matter what. The problem we have now with that kind of system, that's going to grow. That part's going to improve. We're going to get more graphic scanning. But my biggest challenge now is getting access to the graphic scans. In Iowa, they took the most extreme route, and somebody at the state legislature banned any member of the public from ever seeing those graphic scans, top to bottom.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, ridiculous, ain't even ridiculous the word for it. So those have got to be – that law has got to be reviewed either in court or in the legislature, one way or the other. And it's interesting that they went with Iowa. Iowa's mostly doing graphical scans. And apparently somebody realized that this was a citizen audit tool from, you know, to an extreme degree and decided, oh, we can't have that. In Colorado, the graphic scans are public record, but there's a big barrier and technical problem. They wrote a law that said they're worried about voters putting little marks on the paper in some corner or something that would indicate who they were so that they could sell their vote to other people. Okay? One of the principles in American voting is when you vote, when you walk out of the polling place, you're not supposed to be able to prove who you voted for. Now, some people, of course, take their smartphone in, take a picture of the ballot, and walk out with it. That happens. But the concept is you're not supposed to be able to sell your vote afterwards because 80, 90 years ago in New York City, that happened sometimes. Back when Tammany Hall was still in operation, especially. Therefore, in Colorado, they said that after the graphic scans are made, if they're going to be released public, the county has to look at each one and edit out any stray marks or any voter initials in the corner or any junk like that that might identify the vote. So I've been billed up to eight. I submitted a bunch of public records requests in Colorado, and they're telling me I can't get them unless I pay $800 or $900 or more in some cases before I can get these records because they have to be edited. The problem is, if they're going to sit there and hand-edit them, there's nothing to stop them from hand-editing what the vote totals are, so the whole thing is an exercise in pointlessness. So, okay, that's a good one. And then, of course, we're getting a lot of counties here, there, and everywhere, mostly outside of Wisconsin, I must say, that are taking the ESNS graphical scanner and turning off the saving of images. We're getting reports of that from Ohio and elsewhere. So that's another problem. Is somebody's got to go back and tell ESNS to take that switch off or lock it in the save, you know, save the graphics position. That's going to be something. We can probably force ESNS to do that, honestly, with just public pressure. And that's underway because nobody wants to be the next Diebold and has to go completely out of the voting system business because of bad PR. That's what happened to them.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny, too.
Wow. Well, I tell you, you really give us a lot to think about, and and it just shows me that the vote is not so safe right now. And hasn't been for a long time. But we need to secure it. That's why I'm glad there's people like you out there that studies this, investigates it, looks at it, and come up with recommendations. And anything you want to say to wrap it up?
Yeah, I do. I want to go back to one more subject of the potential for racial disparity and racial prejudice in the vote in this process. We talked about in Wisconsin, and this is a problem elsewhere, is that how the vote is handled tends to be different in the bigger urban jurisdictions versus the smaller rural jurisdictions. And the smaller rural jurisdictions mostly have it better. And that shouldn't come as any surprise, of course. In Wisconsin, we can actually see it
in the difference between hand counting the recount and machine counting the recount. But there's an even worse example. I told you about one of the flaws in the Diebold Central Tabulator program that we found early on, back around 2003. Well, let me tell you about the latest one Bev Harris found. It turns out there's a way, and you can Google the words fraction magic and Bev Harris, so that'll work. That'll find everything you need to know. Fraction magic is, oh yeah. Turns out that inside the voting machine, it counts votes in decimal fractions. So you can set it to record votes from a particular precinct, for example, as, well, in the worst case, you could take a black precinct and say all votes there are worth 3/5 of a vote.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, that's a horrible phrase. If you know your black history, I assume you, as you
Oh, yeah,
do.
There's 3/5 of the man. I know all about that.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So if you did that, here's the problem. The audit trails would report only in whole numbers. So 3/5 would be rounded up to 1, so your totals of numbers of votes cast at the precinct would look right. It would pass a whole bunch of audits. But in the final tallies at the central tabulator, your votes are only counting for 3/5 of a vote, and that don't look so good.
No, it doesn't.
Do you have any questions for
But no, I just do you plan on? I got one question. Do you plan on writing about this? You know, when it's over, when you're going to publish something about it, or you know, publish your findings? No, I appreciate you coming on the show during, you know, and while it's going on. But I just wanted to be able to follow up to because I really like what you're doing. And so if you put out a book or something, I want to make sure I get it.
You know, here's the problem. Ain't nobody got time for that because this is a rapidly expanding field. Just example, to see a racial disparity in the recount here in Wisconsin was something we came into this state examining, looking at what was going on, but we didn't expect to find that. Nobody involved in the whole election integrity movement expected to see that. But
and then now that you've seen that, that begs the question, that where else is it in America that it's going on?
Exactly. Well,
so like you said, that's moving rapid.
Well, recounts are right, but recounts are a rare event. And by the way, a recount is a good way to get a detailed look at how the system works. Okay, how do I put it? If you're a storm chaser and you hear about a class 5 tornado, man, you head right over there because you want to check that out. I'm a bad election chaser. Okay, so when it's time for a recount, oh boy, jump in the car, wife, come on, let's
knock
this up.
Yeah, let's go do it.
Well,
Jim, it's been great.
Snow on the ground, but here we come. Put it in gear, man.
Yeah. Jim, it's been great having you, and I look forward to having you back on again.
Can I do one other thing real quick, Arthur?
Hello?
Yeah. Marcus, can we do one other thing? I'm going to put out a plea for money for my buddy's website, Election Nightmares.
Okay, go ahead. Plug it.
I'm on funding. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Plug
a buddy of mine, John Brakey, runs a website called electionnightmares.com. So you can find his PayPal information right at the top of the page. John Brakey and I have worked together for years. And if you donate any amount of money and put 42 cents at the end, like you're going to give $5, if you say 42 cents, it'll get earmarked for me and the Wisconsin effort that's going on and other election examinations that I do coming up real quick. It looks like we're going to head out to Nevada or Michigan after this, most likely. But anyway, electionnightmares.com, send PayPal.
Electionnightmares.com.
Send PayPal and stick 42 cents on it as a marker.
Are they on Facebook?
I believe so. I believe John Brakey and Audit AZ, which is his group,